This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Starting next week, households that qualify for the expanded child tax credit will be able to start receiving payments, and that could mean as much as $300 per child per month to families in the Commonwealth. Massachusetts Congresswoman and Assistant Speaker of the House, Catherine Clark, says that it's something we should have done decades ago. She joins us now to talk about it and some other things happening in D.C. Assistant Speaker Clark, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Oh, so good to be with you, Tiziana.
I'm glad to have you. And here's where I want to start, Congresswoman. We've talked to you on the show for years. You and I have been talking a lot during this pandemic about kids. Now, children, families have always been a hallmark issue for you, but it does seem to me like over this last year or so, you have really leaned into your focus on children. Talk to me about that. Why have you put so much focus and effort on kids over this last year or year and a half?
You know, kids are our bellwether. They are our future. And what we do to help support children and families coming out of this pandemic, couldn't be more important. We know how devastating the rise in child poverty, the rise in homelessness, the rise in food insecurity and hunger among children has been devastating for the welfare of kids across the country and here in the Commonwealth. And we have this opportunity to build back better and to center our policies on the future, which is with our children. And we can't build that economy of tomorrow with the policies of the past.
Are you worried? Are you worried that we are losing a generation of kids? I don't mean to sound melodramatic, but in listening to what you just said and the devastating effects of this pandemic, do you have a real fear here?
I do. Unfortunately, I share your concern. One in seven American children is now living in poverty. I mean, let that sink in. We are the richest nation in the world, and yet one out of seven kids is living in poverty, and that could be on the rise. But it's not like we can't do things or we don't know how to change course and support our children and families. We do. And it is about supporting childcare. It is about this crucial tax credit that you mentioned at the top that's going to start putting checks in the hands of families next week. It's about policies like paid leave, increasing housing supply, all of these pieces that can help our children and their parents thrive. And if we want to build back an economy that is not just status quo, but is meeting this moment of racial, economic, and climate justice, centering it around children is an excellent way to make sure that we get it right.
All right, let's dig into some of this. Let's start with the child tax credit. It could be, depending on your income level, it could be a tax credit of $250 a month per child. It could be a tax credit of up to $300 a month per child. It's also temporary, so it starts next month. It's not forever. There are already some calls from advocates hoping to make it permanent. And then there are critics who say, why should we permanently take tax money from other people and give it to people who chose to have kids? I am sure you are familiar with that debate. What do you say to that pushback? Or are you someone who is supporting eventually making this permanent?
Oh, I am absolutely in the make this permanent camp. You know, the American Families Plan, which I support, calls for an extension to 2025. And I completely agree with that. And House Democrats want to make this extension permanent, and we are going to continue to work on that. It is long past time that we help families meet the needs of children. And studies have shown us that when you give this sort of support to families, they spend it on the essentials. They spend it on food and diapers and childcare and making sure there is shelter for their families. if we can rise kids out of poverty, we can make our whole economy and our communities stronger. So this is one of the very best investments that we can do with public dollars.
I know that you are familiar, and this goes from the local level to the federal level, right? There is this constant debate about spending on kids when the taxation comes both to families who have kids, but also families who don't, or their kids are grown, or they're now older adults. I know you're aware of that constant tension when it comes to collecting taxes to spend on children. What is the economic case to individuals who are paying taxes and their kids are grown or they don't have kids, and this is money that would then permanently go to other families?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Investing in children and families isn't just the right thing to do. It is great for building a robust economy. The high cost of raising children has forced millions of people, predominantly women, out of the workforce. So when a parent drops out of the workforce or reduces hours or takes a lower paying job, there are a lifetime of consequences on earnings, savings, and retirement. And these losses, it's estimated, can cost the economy $64 billion a year. So I certainly remember when I had very young children that my entire income went to the child care bills. And I was fortunate. I had a husband who also had an income, and we got through those years. But we know with childcare alone that for every dollar we invest, we get over $7 back. So this isn't just about targeting relief for parents and children. It is about how do we build a strong, inclusive economy, and how do we even out the income and wealth gaps in this country? Because that is how we sustain a robust economy where people have opportunity. And that is good for everybody. Whether you are a grandparent, you've never had children, you sit on a corporate board, or you're a teacher. These are investments that are good for families and good for the country. You know, it's long past time that we stop thinking about tax breaks are only for corporations. This is a tax cut for the middle class, and it will be a really critical economic tool.
So I want to now dive in. I've been trying to think about how to do this, Congresswoman, because I think for the average person, the bills and the discussions around economic spending, infrastructure, et cetera, that are happening in Washington right now, I think it's messy and confusing. So here's how I want to kind of try to draw it out. There have been a number of bills proposed. Right now, what we are looking at is a possible surface roads and transportation infrastructure bill that it seems like there is bipartisan support for. At the same time, there is a tug of war going on over whether other economic spending should either be attached to that or should have to pass alongside of it. So first, for the average person, is that a fair way to characterize the discussions that are going on around infrastructure and economic spending in Congress right now?
You know, I would put a slightly different lens on it. And the way I look at this is the pandemic has shown us so many inequities that we knew existed. If we just look at women in work, something that we've discussed before, we know that women make up almost 3/4 of minimum wage earners. We know that women are our frontline workers working in grocery stores, cleaning hospitals. We know that the travel and hospitality industry is predominantly made up of women and low paid jobs. And when those jobs disappeared, when there wasn't a way to have kids in school, when childcare shut and was so destabilized, This impacted women in the workforce, and they left. So what we need to do is look at how do we put these pieces of our economy back together. When we talk about infrastructure, we're talking about ways to get people to work. Infrastructure that makes our economy work, whether that's literally, you know, delivering goods across our roads and bridges and commuting to work, or other equally essential policies like paid leave, like supporting and investing in child care.
So that's where I want to jump in. And I apologize for interrupting. I know we have limited time, and there are a couple things I really want to get to with you. So what we have right now is the possibility of a smaller infrastructure deal that is about traditional infrastructure, surface roads and bridges, that kind of thing. And then it seems, Congresswoman, like a debate inside the Democratic Party about whether or not to require a bill on these other areas of new infrastructure, to use a term that might describe what you just said. And the question about whether to go all or nothing or take what you can get. And that seems like a hard question to answer in this moment. Where are you on it? Are you on, if we can only get the surface roads and bridges piece, take it? Or do you feel it all has to be bundled together?
I don't see this as an either or. These two are so linked together. We cannot leave, half of our economy or three quarters of our economy behind. We have to do it all. And whether it comes up, which can be very confusing looking at the different parliamentary procedures and processes of Congress and the House versus the Senate and how we handle and move legislation through, is really the secondary question. The primary question is one that House Democrats have answered, that the president has answered. These pieces, these policies, are all one. If we want a robust recovery, if we want to remain our place as a global economy, we have to move forward on all of these pieces together. The timing may be different, but they must move as one package, because that's the way we make a difference for Americans at home. That's the way we build an economy that is inclusive and for the future.
So I hear you on the timing may be different, but it does appear to watchers that it is possible that even if you did them at different times, the whole thing might fall apart because there might not be the votes if it appears that the surface transportation piece is tied to the larger economic spending piece. Am I understanding that correctly? And if so, are you risking getting anything done in order to get it all done?
We are going to get it all done. I mean, that's our resolve, because that's what needs to happen. So I don't see it as a series of trade-offs or choices. This is about how we invest in the American people. And we only have to look back to March to see that the Democrats in both the House, the Senate, and the White House have already done this, and we can do it again. It's just simply, we can't have sort of halfway measures here. Rebuilding our roads and bridges, expanding broadband, all of that is critical. We can't leave that behind to paid leave and child care and making sure that our elders are cared for. You know, we can't say, well, we're going to put climate off until another time. All of these issues are urgent. All of them, we have solutions and ways to do this now. And, the president has set forth an agenda that encompasses everything. And so it is not a risk to leave parts behind. It is really just how they will be packaged, how they will come together. We'd love to have with broad bipartisan support, but that's going to be up to the Republicans. What I can tell you is that the Democrats are committed to making sure this full package gets into law, because it's what we need for the future.
So, Congresswoman, before I let you go, just one other question on a different subject. There's a spate of shootings over the holiday weekend across the country. Mm-hmm. Later in the hour, we're going to talk about what happened in Wakefield on Route 128. Mm-hmm. We have a rabbi who was stabbed in Brighton recently. And then today, services for Ramona Cooper, one of two killed in a violent rampage in Winthrop, which is in your district. What are you hearing from your voters in your district about these incidents? And is there anything that can and should be done at the congressional level to heal and combat hate in the wake of these things?
Yeah, and it's not lost on me that today is also the 6-month anniversary of the insurrection at the Capitol, which at its heart had issues of domestic terrorism and white supremacy. And so all of these continue to be a threat, not just in Washington at the Capitol, but in our communities. And my heart goes out to the victims and the people of Winthrop, to the rabbi in Brighton, and to all of those impacted by this time, where, you know, we are seeing a rise in white nationalism and anti-Semitism. And so we have to do, you know, all things at this time. We have to look at this moment of racial reckoning. We have to memorialize the truth about January 6th. And we have to speak and work for racial justice in this country. It is, you know, a great sadness that this has struck so close to home, but we all have a role to play. And all these economic issues that we've been talking about very much feed back into this. How do we meet this moment of racial justice, of combating domestic terrorism, is very tied to building an economy where there is opportunity for all. And it starts with caring for our kids and making sure that our elders can lead lives of dignity. And so all of these issues come together, and we have an opportunity to really make meaningful change in our country.
Congresswoman and Assistant Speaker of the House, Catherine Clark, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you so much.